Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. Barnes & Noble put itself up for sale on Tuesday, citing pressure from the digital book market. And while Amazon and other online booksellers are gaining market share around the country, this week's issue of New York Magazine claims we're experiencing a revival of the independent bookstore in New York. The country's big box retailers are struggling nationwide, while indie bookshops are thriving in the city. So we thought we'd take a look at what the future holds for the brick-and-mortar bookstore. This is the first installment of a month-long series on books and the publishing industry with Michael Cater, the founder of Publishers Marketplace and the widely read daily newsletter for the publishing industry, Publishers Lunch. He'll join us each Thursday at this time. Michael Cater, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So first, the big news this week in the book business is that Barnes & Noble, the largest traditional bookseller in the U.S., is up for sale. But this isn't a fire sale. So what's going on?
I think the important thing for listeners to bear in mind is this is really a financial story. It's primarily about a battle between two extremely wealthy men. Len Riggio, who founded Barnes & Noble, is its chairman and still the single largest shareholder, and another billionaire named Ron Burkle, who started buying a big block of stock in the company last year and has been agitating for removal of certain measures imposed by the board to keep him from buying control or even a larger stake on the open market. Barnes & Noble is also in the middle of a transition. They're trying to go from being just a bookstore to being a bookstore and a more vital website and a company that can also sell ebooks and ebook devices with their Nook family of products. So financially, it's always hard in public markets when you want to invest in your company to turn it into something new, but you don't have the results to show for it yet. So in part, Barnes & Noble has just gotten caught between some of these titanic forces in financial markets, even though most people think they're probably doing the right things. They sell a lot of physical books. They sell a lot of books on college bookstores, and they're getting pretty good uptake on their new electronic initiatives. But it's going to take some time for them to figure out what's the right number of stores to have and what's the right balance between selling ebooks and selling print books.
So from the customer's experience, should they be expecting fewer Barnes & Noble stores or more?
I think from the customer's experience with respect to Barnes & Noble and bookstores in general, we've passed what I like to call peak bookstores. You know, people like to talk about peak oil. We've seen the time in our lifetimes when the number of bookstores in America was going to keep rising. And it seems clear that it's either going to stay level or decline, but relatively slowly. We've still got lots of book superstores out there, as you pointed out. As the industry starts to reconform itself, we may go from those giant superstores back to these vital small stores that are much more closely connected to their community and don't have to try to compete with selections of 125,000 books, but can offer smaller curated selections that are distinctive and matter to their particular audiences.
Well, let's talk about that, and I want to put out a call for listeners to give us a call. And I'd like to know where you buy your books and why. And do you only go to independent bookstores? Do you shop for books on Amazon? So I'm not going to judge you. Just call 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. You can also post the comment to the show page at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. Tell us where you buy your books and why. And I'm just going to say that I feel, you know, sort of morally obligated to go to my local bookseller. But sometimes I find the catnip from the local Barnes & Noble sort of irresistible. Maybe it's the 30% discount on the staff picks, or, you know, maybe it's just kind of the allure of, like, well, I can buy somebody a gift certificate from them, a gift card, and it's very easy to use. You can use it online. You can go into the store. They have a big selection of books. So I'm wondering, sort of given that kind of pull, and especially, you know, I'd rather spend 30% less in this economy, how it is that New York Magazine can be putting out this sort of story about how, and not to sort of doubt their veracity, but how that story can be that indie bookstores can be doing well. What is going on?
I think there are a number of forces at work. As I said, the stores that they're focusing on are, for the most part, stores that are smaller in scale and very closely connected to their communities. And in some respects, because Barnes & Noble and Borders, which actually has been in financial trouble for a few years, have been financially impinged in recent years, they've stopped opening new locations all over the place. And in some respects, they've stopped upgrading existing locations all over the place. So for the strongest of the independent stores and the ones with very clear vision or very clear connection to their communities or very clear passion, there's a feeling that it's opened up an opportunity. It is double-edged. There's a terrific store called Legacy Books down in Plano, Texas, that was the largest independent bookstore to open in the last decade at least, which unfortunately just announced yesterday that they're going to close in August. So I think some of this is a question of finding the right scale for the next era of bookstores. And there is some sense that small and passionate may be beautiful again.
All right. Everything old is new again. I just want to read a couple of our comments on Facebook. Joan on Facebook says, I love the AC and anonymity in the box stores. Love the politics of the indie, but ultimately I prefer Amazon, especially for used textbooks. What used to be $400 of books is now about $50, thanks to the internet. And then she notes, I'm trying to save money for the new MetroCard. But I think that is a sort of important point, that sort of a lot of costs are going up and people seem to have less cash on hand. Let's also take a call. Bonnie from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I've been going to used bookstores a lot in Lower East Side and East Village and just below Union Square. But my main source has actually started to become older people getting rid of their libraries and stacking them up in front of their houses for recycling. There have been a lot of academic texts, out-of-print books, and that's been a really plentiful source.
Yeah, the whole sort of free cycle thing, it's a sort of interesting phenomenon, particularly with books. But how large is that, Michael Cater?
It's hard to get an exact size on it because the last time any industry organization was able to do a study on it was a number of years ago. It's clearly a very significant business. It's clearly something you can't do with an e-book. You can't put it on your stoop and let somebody else come pick it up. It is one factor that, among many, that's made it a little harder to run a store that sells brand new books. Although, again, a lot of successful independent booksellers have realized that carrying used books as part of their merchandise mix can be very successful, offer good value, and give them a point of differentiation in the marketplace. You know, I think one important point that the industry would want listeners to know is there's all different kinds of bookstores out there. If people like having bookstores to browse in and like having booksellers to talk to and bookstores to hang out in, some of your purchases need to be made in physical bookstores, because if all our purchases gravitate towards the cheapest or purely online vendors, someday there will be fewer stores there to go shop in and fewer opportunities to go learn about books from an actual human being or look at books in person before deciding whether you want to buy them.
Let's take another call. Patrick from Nassau County. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I have really enjoyed hanging out in small bookstores and especially, you know, used bookstores, and have a really great time hanging out there and browsing. But I find that I usually don't wind up reading the books that I get there. And it's because my reading time is really very valuable to me. So if I'm going to read a book, it's really going to be something that I've chosen very specifically to read, and I usually can't find that in a small bookstore. So most of what I wind up reading comes from friends or the library or online.
What about that, Michael Cater?
Well, it's an interesting observation. Of course, there's an old saw in the business that lots of people buy books that they don't actually read, but that they enjoy owning, and that, in fact, part of what's sustained the business over the years is books that you like to have and you think you might read someday, but don't necessarily read immediately. I think, obviously, lots of consumers are looking more closely at value these days. One of the questions about e-books, quite frankly, is will people buy e-books on impulse the same way they buy physical books, or do you only buy one to read next because theoretically, in 60 seconds, you can always get another if you want to have it.
All right. And speaking of 60 seconds, that's about how long we have. So I do want to mention that we will be talking about e-books. This indie phenomenon, is it sustainable in smaller places, or is it sort of a big city thing that like New York City or San Francisco or Chicago could sustain, but other areas maybe could not?
In some respects, it's easier to sustain in small areas because there's potentially less competition from big chains and other types of stores. Running a bookstore is hard anywhere, but if you have passion and knowledge and a close community connection, the possibilities can exist in cities large and small.
All right. Michael Kater, who is the founder of Publishers Marketplace and the widely read daily newsletter for the publishing industry, Publishers Lunch, which is kind of a blast from the past in itself. You're going to be back talking to us all month. What are some of the things we should be looking forward to?
Well, we know we're going to talk about ebooks because that's getting all the coverage these days. And there are lots of other issues, and I'm sure we'd love to hear from your listeners, too, about which of the many things happening in the book world interest them. So.
All right. Well, we'll be following that. And in the meantime, to prepare for our further discussions with Michael Kater, you might want to go get the video of You've Got Mail, which is about just this battle on the Upper West Side of New York. Thanks so much to everyone who called. Thanks so much to everyone who commented. We will continue this discussion on our webpage. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. And we'll be talking about books all month. So keep reading.